AI is everywhere, and especially in learning and development. Every learning tech solution says they're powered by AI, but are they really? Does AI solve all your worries, or does it just create more problems? On the all-new Learning Uncovered podcast, we'll cut through that noise, exploring the truth about AI in the corporate learning world. We'll look at the real pros and cons and how you can actually use AI to make an impact in your business. So get ready to uncover what really matters. I'm Tom Pope, and welcome to this all-new podcast, Learning Uncovered. Welcome back to L&D Uncovered. In this second episode, we'll continue our chat with industry experts Laurie Niles-Hoffman and Carlo Jose, exploring how AI is shaking up the world of learning and development. So let's dive straight back in. Laurie, Carlo, welcome back. Let's kick off with this. Is AI making us all lazy?
Is it making us lazy? The fact that you can now very quickly generate kind of an initial kernel of an idea. I think this is one of those half glass empty, half glass full type of conversations. And interesting enough, shameless plug, I wrote about this recently in terms of our kind of reliance on AI enabled content generation in my LinkedIn newsletter. So that's the shameless plug. I don't think so, because I think it is dependent on the attitude that you are kind of approaching AI with. I look at it personally as it's going to get me to an outcome faster by helping me to get the initial ideas out of my brain. You still have to exert creativity and intent and purpose in crafting the prompt that leads you to an output. But equally, you don't just kind of copy and paste and go from there. You still have to exercise critical thinking, discern what makes sense to you or doesn't. I just think that it takes away the burden of having to do a lot of research that's very time consuming. So I actually think it'll make us faster, and that's the promise of it to begin with. But it will come across as lazy if we're not doing any kind of human in the loop, critical thinking, discernment, and challenge, because we still know that there's hallucinations and it's not kind of gospel truth just because ChatGPT said so. That's my take on it. What do you think, Laurie?
Agree, definitely with all of that. I guess I get a little bit more existential when I think of what is laziness? What are some things that we are going to accept are automated and that's okay? For example, we used to write letters. No one writes a letter anymore, right? And it would be considered, I know from my friend's kids, I send them a gift for their birthdays and Christmas or holidays or whatever. If I get a text, like that's, a win, right? It used to be that it was instilled upon me that you wrote a thank you letter and it was handwritten and crafted and when, maybe a picture or something like that, and that was sent. So when I think of, for example, now, I know people that I email who their bot or agent is just responding and emailing back. I have an agent famously called Sven. Sven, I built him. He's not perfect, but he reads my emails overnight because I'm in Toronto. So I'm 5-6 hours behind everybody. And he reads those and he crafts responses. And then I go, yes, no, I've trained it on things. And then I decide, is that laziness? Am I sleeping in bed an extra hour? I'm not, but it's freeing my time up for other things. So I remember, I'm going to say her name is Federline in grade 11, who made me memorize all of these equations and whatnot. And she's like, Laurie, you're never going to always have a calculator in your pocket. Well, Miss Federline, you are wrong, because I do. And is that laziness, right? Or for example, learning languages. I speak to my nieces and nephews in Poland. I taught them English all during the pandemic. When I go there now, they simply take out their phone and do auto-translate. Are they lazy? Or do they have the power in their pocket to speak over 200 languages and not have to spend the 10 years perfecting one and take a gamble on one? It's maybe I'm a little too philosophical about some of these things.
No. I think that's in my day-to-day, the things that I love that are getting automated is a simple thing like my Microsoft Outlook blocking focus time for me, right? Is that lazy? Well, actually, I don't think so. It's giving me the ability to then protect time in my calendar without having to do anything. It does it a week in advance and I can still make adjustments. And again, back to human in the loop, sometimes I'll replace that focus time with some other activity, but it allows me to protect my calendar and my time to do the things that I need to do, right? I mean, as much as I hate these links, you know, book an appointment with me, here's my calendar. I really hate that. I'd rather have, you know, our calendar talk to your calendar so that they can sort it out. All I want to make a decision on is, yeah, I would like to talk to you. Calendars, go sort it out. Build an agent for that. But I hate that click a link here so you can book an appointment with me because you're not that special and neither am I.
Right? You talk to my people. My people talk to your people, yeah?
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I understand that. And I totally understand what you guys are saying. It is that you can look at it in through different types of lenses. Okay, well, let me kind of slightly change a little bit, right? Certainly in our industry, AI right now can generate learning content in seconds, right? And the quality of that learning and that content is going to get better and better and better over time as the AI learns. So why do we need learning and development professionals to do this in the next 12 months or so? And I'm going to go, Carlo, to you first, if that's okay. Because again, it's the old controversy button, but that's why we're here, right?
Yeah. I don't mind a bit of controversy. So, and I think the kind of calling it an L&D department is still kind of part of that old organizational construct, right? And I think some adventurous organizations are changing the way that they approach organizational structures, et cetera. But I do think if I stick to the classic model, there is a need for learning and development to be the stewards and the facilitators of how do we build capability in the organization and support our kind of businesses in the achievement of our strategy and our aspirations. I feel strongly in that there is still a specialism within an organization that needs to take care of that and needs to govern and ensure that it's heading in the right direction. There's no silver bullet. The AI is not going to take care of all of that for you. I do think that L&D's skill sets are changing. And if I use some of the classic words, do we actually spend a lot of time now performance consulting and measuring impact and outcomes and engaging with the business? Or are we still in the old-fashioned order taking? And I guarantee you, some L&D practitioners are still doing the old classic order taking, go commission this or go buy that. That's not gone away. And I think that's a reflection of maturity of organizations, et cetera. For the more progressive organizations, L&D teams now need to start understanding the place that AI has within the organizational construct, not just in L&D, but how it influences and impacts the business. And we still have a role to play in partnership with many other parts of the organization in shaping culture, in helping leadership to be able to be much more effective in the changing circumstances that they operate in. I'm not naive about this. I think you can't stay static as an L&D organization or an L&D function within a company, but there is still a place for it, in my opinion.
Completely concur. So no Fight Club. But I think the question is the size and the scope. L&D skills have to change, and we've been slow about it. I'm using we, even not just as a royal we, but a collective, in the sense that we've been saying for so long, you need to learn data, you need to learn performance consulting, you need to get a seat at the table, and these things have not happened. I actually think this is a point in time, and maybe this is, you know, hyperbole because we've been saying it over and over again, but like now you actually have to do this. This is do or die. Our skills have to be upgraded and augmented. Failure to do that is going to mean you're probably not lasting a long time in the industry, and I know that's going to hurt a lot of people, and I don't mean to. But I flip it on the other side and say there's also a whole swath of people. I don't even call them learners, but they're your colleagues. They're humans. They're individuals who their success and ability to thrive and remain relevant is dependent on the L&D function. And so if we are reluctant to change, it's not just us. It is we are impeding an entire future for a lot of really people who are in some really challenging situations. Think of what they're getting slammed with automation and AI and just their day-to-day work changing. So I guess my summary of that is sorry, not sorry, it's time.
What are the symptoms for me? If you're still chasing attendance records, completions, butts in seats in classrooms, et cetera. I mean, there's a place for that, but that's kind of very much lead metrics, not outcome and impact. And if your L&D function isn't starting to think about impact and outcomes, insights, helping the business to see things that they don't normally see, helping to manage skills, taxonomies, and job architecture, and really contributing to the strategic workforce kind of aspiration of being able to understand supply and demand of skills and what are the emerging and nascent skills, what skills are kind of going away, how do we mobilize people across the organization, and is that even possible, buy versus build strategies, then I think you're missing a trick. You know, there's a place for the kind of old school administration and operational aspect of L&D. And I do think that that's where AI and automation will take over a lot of those activities and give you more time for the other things. So I think those are the worthwhile pursuits, which is being at the table is a starting point. You've got to have something useful to contribute to the conversation that helps to support the business. And so unless you start thinking about all of these underlying, you know, data governance and data quality and trying to kind of formulate the hypothesis and ask the right questions, and seeking the kind of information and data that helps you to answer that, then you're missing a trick. I think there's more for the function to be able to deliver value to the organization.
The one thing I was going to mention, it kind of touches on this. Anyone that reads the news over the last 6 to 12 months has seen a major change in the way that organizations are getting their professional consultancy services. And AI is obviously playing a major part in that. And the fact that actually, I think a lot of organizations are saying we could do this ourselves. We can use the tools to be able to do that, right? So the big four are feeling it. You're seeing it across the industry. Is it something that the learning and development profession need to be worried about? And does it touch on what you just talked about and the fact that people have to adapt?
I think L&D should be worried about it. Just from a pure standpoint of, say, like right now, if you're following Google Learn LM, is that now going to be the equivalent of, I can just get better stuff on YouTube that we used to have back in the day, right? And I'm showing my age. Carlo, he's you know, ageless. I'm clearly showing mine. And say if we have a disruption, like, you know, I posted about this the other day that, you know, Microsoft builds a rival to that and slaps it on top of Copilot. Do you need an L&D department at that point if it's that sophisticated and if it's plugged into all of your data and if it's plugged into good, sound learning principles that are not, by the way, a two-page SOP and it has that level of sophistication and development? There's a lot of questions.
You know, again, it kind of goes back to how you label things. So L&D function in the classic sense, or is this starting to become much more embedded in the business as part of their business as usual? This is how we do things. It's part of the cycle of employee development and managing, you know, business operations, right? I feel quite lucky that at GSK, we've got our learning and capability teams, our talent and leadership development teams under the same umbrella as our people, data, and analytics teams. And so you don't classically associate your data and analytics teams as L&D, but actually they're a key component of what we do. And going back to what I mentioned earlier is that I'm looking at the data and insights products and solutions that they're delivering as part of our L&D functions proposition. Now, people will get territorial and say, no. This is data and analytics providing a value to the organization. But I'm helping to shape what are the questions that we're trying to ask. I'm helping to build the piping around, and I'm not a data engineer, but I understand enough to know we need to architect our ecosystem in a way that all of this data we can take advantage of. So L&D is very much part of those conversations. And down to the solutions that we're deploying to the individual learners, all of that has to kind of match up, right? So whether you call it in the future an L&D function or not, I think is, for me, less important. But I think the value that can be delivered by being able to acquire these different activities and skill sets to deliver value to the business, I think is still going to be a place for it.
And I think the name doesn't matter. I think we get really, in L&D, we get fussed about these things. I remember when it was just learning, and then I forget who came in and said, development, we need development in there. Now we have learning and impact. Now we have learning and enablement. Who cares? That's the least of our problems right now. It's, what are we actually doing?
Yeah. And I think just to your point about job titles and things like that, I think people get stuck about it. It does make it very difficult when people get really creative around, you know, what was classically L&D is now called something else. It's, you know, capability development. I'm sure, Laura, you've encountered all kinds of job titles, you as well, Tom, of jobs that are very much 80% the same, but have slightly different, you know, people effectiveness, you know, whatever you might call it. But I think the bottom line is they're all trying to kind of achieve the same thing. And so the shape of organizations, the job titles and labels might change in the future. I'm actually, and slightly off tangent, I'm actually interested in the ability of AI with a lot of the kind of slightly off topic on the L&D, but around job architecture and how organizations work. being able to understand it and ignore the label and the name, understand the activity, the skill sets involved, and the outcomes that are being generated by roles, which is an even other tangent, which is around this whole gig economy within organizations. Still not a reality. We thought it would be 5 years ago and 8 years ago. Still hasn't quite happened. Opportunity marketplaces haven't enabled that yet, I don't think, in large scale.
And 2 points on that. Yeah, we haven't gotten to that gig economy. And I'm a big fan of Dr. Sandra Loughlin and her work when it comes to translating skills to tasks. You know, what do you actually do? Like, forget about the title, forget about the skill of it is, what do you actually do? And she swayed me. I used to be definitely what I call the psycho skiller. You know, definitely on the skills side. And I look more now towards task. Fun thing to do, though, I do this as an independent. When I go to conferences, I don't want to get spammed. So I'm really sorry for people who have booths. I'll put my job title as like cat herder or something, cloud wrangler. You'd be amazed. Nobody puts you on their mailing list. Nobody follows up with you. Just a little bit of a trick. But then I think, what do I actually do every day? I do a lot of cat herding.
So it is your job title in reality, Laurie. That's good.
Exactly. Some of them are more feral than others. Some of them need declawing, which we should never do. Just so I don't get any hate mail. No, don't declaw them. But some of them you just also just need a good brush.
I'm going to be copying that, Laurie, from now on. So thank you. I always used to hide my badge, turn my badge the other way around. Okay, I'm conscious that time is ticking. So I wanted to kind of move on to a little bit. We've touched on it anyway, and I think we've kind of covered some of it, but it'd be good just to kind of be clear in terms of the headlines. What can our colleagues in L&D do today to prepare for tomorrow around AI?
Hire a teenager. I'm actually not joking. How long did it take us people, no matter how young Carlo looks, how long did it take all of us to hook up our microphones and headphones? How often did Beth make sure that we had the right microphones and headphones? If you had a 15-year-old in here, it would have been absolutely no problem. They would have started right away. There wouldn't have been a millennial pause. So I'm actually not joking. I think we underestimate, from what we're seeing, how fast things are actually moving for another generation. I'm a big fan of reverse mentoring, and it doesn't happen often in organizations where you do pair a C-level with somebody from maybe not a different generation, because I don't think it's always age. I don't want to infer that, because there's a lot of people I know that are super, super technical and on top of things and, are I'll just say older than I am. It's not always age, but it is about what you're exposed to. And I think we can probably agree that younger generations are exposed to it a lot more on their day to day. But that reverse mentoring, I think, is one of the best starting points for any organization. Be ethical about it. I mean, pay them, but, hire a teenager for a while.
I like that. We might have to pay them. Thanks, Laurie. Carlo?
Probably in Bitcoin or something. I don't know.
That's fine. That's what they used to, right?
I'll start with this. One of my former CLOs had called me an enthusiastic amateur when it came to learning. And that was because I didn't have the pedigree. I came from an operations background and I was starting to explore the L&D profession as something that I wanted to pursue. Lo and behold, it's a decade since that first label got placed on me. And I still feel sometimes like an enthusiastic amateur. And the reason I say that is I think curiosity, openness to the idea that things are changing and being able to adapt to that, I think, is quite important. So there are some core things that still work in the L&D practice when it comes to needs analysis, learning design, the classic stuff. That hasn't necessarily gone away, but the world's moved on around us. And so I think when it comes to artificial intelligence, if you're not even aware of the basics, you're falling behind already, because your business in some shape or form, and your employees are exploring these things, and you can't get left behind. It doesn't mean that you have to be a deep expert in it. You need to know enough to be able to function and operate and have a conversation. What was it that they said? Dinner or cocktail bar conversation. Have enough knowledge and interest and curiosity about this to be able to have a conversation, or at the very least, ask questions. And I think that's the kind of advantage that you can set apart for yourself versus people that are just kind of shutting their eyes and saying, yeah, I'm just going to keep doing the thing I'm doing today. So it may sound obvious, but if you're an L&D professional and you're not caught up on the AI technologies that are influencing products, services, experiences, not just as learning and development practice, but even in the consumer side of things, then you're really falling behind. So remain curious and start to invest in your own kind of understanding and education, even starting with the very foundational things about artificial intelligence.
Carlo, do you see in your organization and just in your network, because I experience it on my side, skepticism and almost denial about what AI can actually do? And that, I think, scares me the most.
I do. I think it's a mixed bag. I feel quite fortunate, though, because GSK is primarily a life sciences and biopharma company, but also very much about science, technology, and innovation. And the kind of the appetite, the attitude towards adopting and exploring artificial intelligence, deepening skills, not just in our tech function, but across the entire organization, is so strong. We've got a really good wave of momentum. We already use a lot of our kind of off-the-shelf tools or in-house tools that are AI-enabled. So it is exposing people to the art of the possible. We have things like, Copilot from Microsoft. They're a big partner of ours. Hundreds and thousands of people are benefiting from that, myself included. And it's become one of those things where it's a bit like Google Maps. If you took it away from me now, I would suffer and be unproductive for a couple of hours, having to kind of retrace my steps on how did I do this before this was available? Even simple things like finding documents, right? We've got LLMs and chat tools that enable us to access very quickly policies, procedure documents, kind of process information. And we've got things like document analysis, translation. And I think our R&D department is really, beyond my understanding, using this around drug discovery, clinical trials, et cetera. So I think there's a strong presence of an interest and appetite for adopting artificial intelligence. And that trickles out to not just our core businesses, but even in our support functions.
We've got a section that we want to cover off, which if you're up for it, it's a bit of a kind of a quick fire round. So I'm going to fire out some questions and I'm looking for kind of short answers, right? So if I go Laurie first and then Carlo, if that's okay. I've got 10 questions. Are you ready?
Ready.
No pressure. Oh, God. Well, no Carlo pressure. Is ready. He's second. I'm going first.
He's second. He's second. He's got his say, yeah, yeah.
He's like, yeah, go I, for I, it. Go. I, yeah, jump.
I tell you what, just we'll see. I might swap it halfway through. Right. We'll see how we get on. Right. Okay. First questions. AI in L&D, hype or hope, Laurie?
Hope.
I'll second that.
Great. Two hopes. Wonderful. Number two, and I'll come to you, Carlo, first. Just be fair to Laurie. Would you trust AI to design your personal development plan?
Nope.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. That's great. We'll come back to that. Okay. Question three. More dangerous, AI bias or human bias?
AI bias.
Same. AI bias.
We have an agreement. Ding for an agreement. Question four. Will AI create more jobs in L&D or take them away, Carlo?
Ooh, this is a tough one to go on first. I think it will create more.
I think it'll be net. There's going to be a loss and then new roles. So I think we'll see the decline and then pivot back up as we find that we need different skills.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right. Question five, and this one's to you, Laurie, first. If you had to pick AI coach or human mentor?
Oh, AI coach. I'm feral and I don't do well with humans. I am the introvert. I don't want to tell a human all my secrets. That's what I have my therapist on my is my AI. Yeah. No, AI all the way.
It's anti-people. Thanks, Laurie. Carlo?
I'm going to plus one that. And truth be told, I am getting really great support from AI on a bunch of things that I'm working on. And the zero hassles, there's no clicking on calendar links, which I've already said I hate, is great.
And if anyone who doesn't believe this, go to your chosen tool. First of all, ask them their name because they do have names. Mine's called Marin. That's what they told me. And the second thing, say, what are three things I should improve on? And what are three things I do really, really well, just based on its history? If you think your therapist knows you well, they know you better, which is so insightful.
I'm doing that next, after this. Okay, next question. Bigger risk, AI makes learning too generic or too intrusive?
I think it's going to be intrusive for a long while. It's going to be clippy. you know, do you need this? Do you need that? Until we get it right, it is going to be intrusive. Because also to think of like, how many chatbots are you using right now? How many tools are you using right now? I call them like the host of Muppets. They're everywhere. So intrusive.
Yeah, I agree. And I think to echo that point about the attention grabbing kind of behavior that some platforms will have, all of these things are going to compete for our attention. So I think it's going to be intrusive.
Okay. This one, I'm back on it now. This one's for you, Carlo, then. Would you let AI run a classroom session within GSK without a human facilitator?
Yes, but it depends.
Absolutely, I would do it. Absolutely, I would do it.
Great. Well, that's something we should try. Maybe that's the next podcast. Okay, Laurie, next question, number 8. We've only got a few left. 10 years from now, then, will AI be an invisible infrastructure or still the headline?
Invisible infrastructure. Don't think we have any idea of also what's coming after. But there's AI, but there's so many deeper layers. We're just touching into reasoning, for example. Absolutely, it'll be invisible. It'll be an expectation, just like electricity and Wi-Fi in your homes.
100% agree with that.
Okay, I would agree too. Okay, penultimate question, and this one's for you, Carlo. What worries you most about AI in L&D?
I think the short-term worry for me is there's going to be some regret spend that might tarnish the reputation of L&D as a whole. Organizations need to be open to the idea that some experiments are not going to go well, and there's going to be some R&D spend involved in that. I do think classically, R&D isn't necessarily a thing that L&D functions think about. You've got to park a little bit of time and energy and even investment to allow for it. And sometimes things don't work out, but you don't know until you actually try it, right? So I think in the context of AI, that might be one of those things that tarnishes not just AI itself, but L&D's reputation when it comes to, you know, plunging into the future and trying new things out, not recklessly, but equally, it takes time and effort to do these things.
Agree completely. I'll come from a slightly different angle in that data privacy is the one that scares me the most. How much data is the fuel that runs these systems, and it's what teaches them. And are we really clear about what we're tracking about people, how and when and how it's being repurposed? Do you really have the option to opt out? Like if we think of GDPR principles, okay, do I have the option to opt out of that at work? Because it may impact and impede my ability to be recognized for internal mobility, or it may not point me in a certain direction of a skill because I've opted out. But meanwhile, one of the skills I have is becoming out of date and I'm at risk. It's a lot of things that are there that do worry me. If also too, as we start interacting with that AI coach, what are we actually putting into it? What is it learning about an individual? And does the individual know that? I came across a software that says we can help identify neurodivergent employees. Now their premise was to help people. It scared the living bejesus out of me because, first of all, what are you going to do with that information? What if that person is not aware? And are you flagging that? And what's happening? So what are we doing with the data and the data privacy is what keeps me awake.
Okay, thank you. We'll come to the last question and then we'll be looking to wrap up. So my last question is, we talked a lot about AI in our industry and also in the greater world, really. And we've talked on all sorts of different elements of it. But is there anything that we've not discussed that you thought we were going to discuss? And what is it? So I'm going to come first to Laurie, if that's okay. Is there anything we've not covered, Laurie, from a world of AI that we thought we would chat about?
There's so much. So I think we've picked all the big ones. I think what we've not touched on is we're looking at it from our point of view and maybe not from the end user and the pressure on them to learn and consume with these types of tools. And that we're maybe going too fast or too slow for how people are using it. There's a big difference to be presented with just a, you know, box to chat to with no prompter telling you what to ask it. That to me, it's almost akin to going into your LMS and not knowing what to do. So I think sometimes we've lost a bit of the learner, but we're getting there.
That resonates with me quite a lot, actually, because I think a big part of my job as head of learning is to be an advocate and champion for the employee and the learner. And I think sometimes we get caught up in the kind of shiny new toys and new technologies that we might forget about that. And so I always advocate for being able to get that feedback loop, that voice of the customer, and using that as part of the conversation, because ultimately we're still humans interacting with work and the world of work, and whether it's the learning part of it and the skills development part of it, you still got to factor that in. It's very tempting to see and look at these things as silver bullets and, you know, kind of push it out the door and see what happens. But I think we still need to support people through the change and the ecosystem that they're working in and the tools that they're dealing with. You know, I think all of this AI capability that's emerging is great, but we can't lose sight of the fact that we've got to manage that kind of change, adoption, and take people along on the journey with us. You know, I do think that AI is just another, it's a new tool that's part of our toolbox. I don't think we should give it much more credence than that, acknowledging that the potential and capability of it is going to be far greater than anything that we've had in our toolbox before.
Thanks both. That makes sense. And I think I would just add to that, and I think something, Laurie, you mentioned that, you know, when the internet came along or when Wi-Fi came along, it was amazing. Wow. And then when, you know, handheld devices, iPhones and so on, and smartphones came along, wow. Is it going to be the same with AI? It'll just fit in, as we said, into our infrastructure. It'll just be one of the many things that will just become, you know, a muscle memory. It'll be part of our world. Maybe we're just all putting too much focus on just that one thing right now. Okay, thank you for listening to our first two episodes on L&D Uncovered. We've really enjoyed it. We're going to be bringing you more episodes in the near future. And if you like this, why not subscribe, like, and follow, and share it with your network? We'd really appreciate that. Thank you to all our guests for all of their wonderful insight. And we'll join you in our next episode coming soon.